Everyone faces questions and decisions that require insight and answers as we move forward personally, professionally, and corporately in all areas of this thing we call life in America today. Hello, this is Joe Schofield, and I invite you to tune in every Monday evening from 6 to 7 p.m. as we talk together and hear from key leaders of all ages and backgrounds about your questions. Interesting, informative, intuitive, but always encouraging. Tune us in on BBS Radio Network.
Join Pastor Joe and co-hosts Commander Rob Hansen, Nancy Hansen, Dr. Paul Hall, Stephanie Thayer, and Dr. Craig Thayer in Raising Expectations.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Monday, March the 1st. Hard to believe, isn't it, for this version of Raising Expectations. And boy, have we got a great program for you tonight. You're going to be really glad you tuned in. And hopefully when you turn off at the end, you'll have your expectations raised and encouraged and strengthened to become the great Americans we want to be and the great people of faith. You know how this works? Very simply, we have a great group of co-hosts that God's enabled me to have as my not only coach, but great friends. I'm Joe Schofield. I'm sure glad you're here with us. I'd like you to meet also Dr. Paul Hall, who's a retired pastor and theologian, well known for all that he has done in so many different areas. Commander Rob and Nancy Hansen, a top gun trainer, flew an F-14 Tomcat, protecting our nation. We tip our hat to you again, Rob, and to all those great men and women who protect our nation all the time. And also to Dr. Craig and Stephanie Thayer. Craig is a trauma surgeon, the head of trauma surgeon in his hospital. And Heather, Stephanie is health and wellness coach. Sorry, Stephanie. Stephanie and health and wellness comes out of Heather. So you can call me Fred twice. That'll work out great after all these months. Hey, and I want to move right along tonight because we've got a very special guest. We're so excited to have you with us, sir. Tonight we have Kurt Schlichter, who is with us. And I hope I said that right, sir. We've been reading the things you've been writing, and we really, really love what you write. And
do you know how weird it is to have a pastor say he likes what I read or write, what I write? You know, I'm sitting here going, this is like the second
here, Kurt.
Well, this is the second pastor included event I've been in like 48 hours. And it's like, I feel like my normal flex is kind of limited.
Oh,
because
really?
I'm not going to burst into an endless stream of profanities. I'll try to keep it a little more highbrow for the benefit of the raising expectation.
Demons without the angels. Okay,
yeah, you feel free to talk about that asterisk administration and actually that buyer's remorse is a good thing. Bring it right up. We're ready to talk. And but what we'd like to do is Rob has really shared. Rob introduced us to you. He and Nancy. I tell you what, these are some of the greatest people you're ever going to meet, Kurt. You're going to love this group of people.
It's an aviator. What the hell am I going to do with that?
Well, just talk slowly because I'm kind of slow on the uptake, Kurt.
Yeah, he's protecting you.
We're not that smart, so.
I'm in the infantry. Are we going to have a dumb off here?
I'll call you and raise you one on the dumb off.
And so, Rob, introduce him for us. I'm going to give you the introduction and about the books and everything. He's got all your books, and I'm getting them. We're excited about what you're doing, my friend.
Great.
Absolutely. Dr. Joe, thank you so much. And again, thank you so much. Let's see, Colonel Kurt Schlichter, Esquire, I guess I should call you.
JD, MS, BA, LOL.
That's right. You could write in to Washington, except you have common sense. And that's not really there at all anymore.
Here's how bad Washington is. I choose to live in L.A.
I think that's about as far as you can get. Now, we live in Arizona, and we couldn't bring ourselves to live in California, even though I spent a lot of time at Miramar, and both of my daughters, by the way,
I went to
Point Loma for college. and you're probably-
Hey, I remember watching you guys fly over, and I would annoy leftists by calling it the sound of freedom, even before that became a cliche.
Well,
back in the 80s, and it really ticked them off.
Well, yeah, I hope so. That was the whole idea. Now, we actually live about 5-6 miles away from Luke Air Force Base, and we still have the Sound of Freedom with F-16s and F-35s.
Nice.
But
nice.
I need to introduce you, sir. Now, in the annals of America's greatest underachievers, one name that you will not find anywhere in those annals is Colonel Kurt Schlichter, Esquire. Okay. Just to give everybody a little bit of an intro, he's a senior columnist at Town Hall. And by the way, Kurt, I did send all these knuckleheads your last three articles, which are awesome. He's a retired Army infantry colonel, so he's not like a RIMF kind of guy, which is great.
No, I was totally a RIMF. I ran a heavily armed car wash in Desert Storm 30 years ago right now. I was literally running a car wash in the war. If you were to shoot me, you'd have had to FedEx the bullets back to me.
Now,
the only reaction I saw is when I walked in on two of my troops in a Connex.
You were in the sandbox when I was in the swimming pool. I was in the Northern Arabian Sea while you were playing in the sandbox, so it's kind of it's like we're brothers or something.
That's a long time ago. That's 30 years.
Well, it gives you an idea of how aged we all are here. And but I also have to mention, and I give Kurt a lot of credit for this, he went to law school at Loyola. Or maybe I need to back up. He went for his bachelor's, I think, at San Diego State. Which
UC San Diego, not State. Close. UC San Diego. I went to the boring school. Yeah, no, I was UCSD in La Jolla.
Oh, you did? You went to La Jolla?
Okay. School.
Well, then we'll have to talk about
San Diego. I would have had fun at San Diego State. I would have partied all the time. Instead, I just partied most of the time.
I thought you did. I thought you were San Diego.
I did.
Okay. Well, that's fine because you mentioned La Jolla, so we can talk about Dr. Seuss a little later, and I'm sure we have a lot to talk about with that. But I also want to mention Chris, a Twitter activist, and by the way, Chris,
I majored in tourism.
My account about a month ago because I was losing thousands of followers every day, and I had just had enough from the Twitter banage. Now, one of the things that everybody here needs to know is that not only has Kurt been, and I listened to him when he was substituting for Dr. Sebastian Gorka on his Salem radio show, but he's also a great commentator on a whole bunch of different channels like OANN, Fox News, Newsmax, and has been a guest on a whole bunch of different radio shows. But one of my favorite comments that he had was, CNN and me are not on speaking terms. I just think
that's true. I did one of those pastor no-go things where I discussed Bill Clinton in rather stark terms to Don Lemon. And when you kind of like make Don Lemon offended, you know, you've crossed some sort of Rubicon. And it was December 22nd, 2015. I discussed Bill Clinton's Oval Office activities in rather stark terms because he had been having a big fuss about Donald Trump. And I was not a Trump supporter then, but I was tired of it. And I'm like, I don't see how you can get upset with Donald Trump all the time when you got Hillary Clinton and she enabled, and I described the activities in rather accurate terms. And I said, you can't say that. So I said, oh, okay. And said it again, because I the chain of command does not include Don Lemon. It goes, God, me, hack media losers. See, it's like a pyramid and they're not in it.
That's right. This is going to be a terrible show. I can tell already. Now, and I want to mention a couple of things. One is I first found out about Dr. Schlichter. I like to call everybody doctor. It gives you relevance and stuff.
Great. Now I have to marry Biden.
When I first read the 23 biggest lies about Donald Trump and you, because it was really more about us, regular free Americans,
yes,
than it was about Donald Trump. And I got that. I also thought that after reading that, I need to start getting into his books. Because, and I found that, I guess People's Republic was the first one.
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Very popular book.
But wait, Kurt, there's more.
More? Tell me more.
Indian Country next. Okay.
Yeah. Got right. A dog?
Yeah, see,
dog?
My dogs. You your Lamborghini or Ferrari or something.
It's a BMW, but you're going the right way. You and I both respect fine engineering.
Well, there you go. I'll be your engineer, and you can be my political science communications guy.
Anyway, Roger.
The third book, nice. Wildfire, equally awesome.
I love that book. So much fun.
I'm not here backwards, but I also have to mention the reviews on this book. Well, all of the books have been great because we've got Hugh Hewitt, we've got Cam Edwards, we've got Jim Garrity. But my favorite comment from Bill Kristol, appalling book, sadly praised by mainstream conservatives. That's got to be classic. Bill Kristol, a never-Trumper conservative who lost the Weekly Standard a few years ago because nobody wanted to read it anymore. Beautiful, Kurt. Well done.
I remember the day they wrote that article. It was in the Bulwark. And I'm not going to describe what I think about the Bulwark because, again, I'm trying to I'm trying not to be too graphic. But I am well known for my lack of fondness for the Never Trump guys and my speculation about their relationship with their pool boys. But I didn't say that. I was somebody. Sorry. Stop that. You. Anyway, he. I read in the Bulwark, it said these are terrible racist books. And I was like, well, that's a shock. I reach over to my Hispanic immigrant wife and I said, honey, I gotta let you in on something. There's the secret is out. that is Arena. And it was, I gotta tell you, it was the, God, it's just such chicken scratch stuff. See, I'm working on my language. It is, I mean, the whole thing about conservatives going and calling somebody who is demonstrably not racist,
right.
You know, of course, I don't answer to the guys at the Bulwark. In fact, no one does. There's somebody else I answer to. And while I've probably got a few things to explain, hating people because of where they came from, that's not on my list of Kurt failings.
Right.
And if it were, it would probably be swamped by some other ones. Mostly involving beer, but so I put that on my books, and that's my new tradition. I'm just gonna stick it on the back of every book, I sell thousands. I am well into the six figures on these books, and I'm very happy that I can do what Andrew Breitbart told us to do, and I want to talk about Andrew in a second because I think it's important. But Andrew told us you've got to make culture. And then your message, input your message in, but you've got to do it right. So I set out to write a book I would want to write, read on an airplane, right? You know, you sit down for a few hours. What would you like to do on an airplane? I wrote that book and, you know, the message came with it. But, you know, there's action, adventure, there are guns and lots of talk about guns and making fun of liberals and more guns. And it's just... They're just a blast to write. People like them. I'm very happy about it. Now, I bring up Andrew Breitbart. It's very important. This is the ninth anniversary of Andrew's death. And Andrew was a friend of mine. And, you know, in some ways, some people could be like, look how cool I am. I was Andrew's friend, you know. Everyone was Andrew's friend. Almost everybody out there in the business back then has an Andrew story because he was that guy. And he would go anywhere and do anything. And that's what I do. So, you know, I will get out there and help anybody out I can to do better in the business. And it's funny, you know, some of these guys
that you meet, I met a couple of years ago. They're now like just like Julio Rosas at Town Hall, a rock star. I mean, he goes out there. He's like Andy Ngo, goes out there. It's young Marine, goes out there and hangs out at these riots and things. He's all over Fox. He was main stage on CPAC today. Took me 12 years in the business to do that. Took him 3. And I couldn't be prouder. And it's just, and it's really Andrew's thing, which is help others out. You know, you're all in together. You all do your own thing, but work together. And, you know, the people who work together have been successful. And the people who were kind of jerks about things have faded away and fallen off. And that's okay. Good riddance. We don't need them.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, but I think the 9th anniversary of his death, I met a lot of really great leaders and historical figures. You know, I was in the military. I met a lot of people who impressed me a lot. Andrew was probably the only true visionary I ever met, somebody who saw things and then saw beyond in ways that no one else had thought of. And I know it sounds kind of like a hack cliche, but it's not. That's what Andrew was. And he was the funniest guy, man. And fun, but he also taught me another lesson, which is you got to take care of yourself. I saw him about 2 weeks before he died. I had lunch with him and a movie star who shall remain nameless. I don't know if he's an out conservative, but Andrew just looked terrible. He's all sweaty. He looked like he put on weight. I'm like, Andrew, you got to take a rest. Can't. Got to keep going. And you know, he had heart trouble and it killed him. He died trying to help us in his own way. And I wish, gosh, it'd be so much fun if he were here now. Can you imagine the fun Andrew would be having right now? Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Oh, I know, Kurt. And you probably know the story how Andrew, who was previously a left liberal, yep. His father-in-law was Orson Bean.
Yes.
And Orson gave him the book, The Way Things Ought to Be, which was the first Rush Limbaugh book.
Yes.
And, you know, he had a little hesitancy, but Orson just said, go ahead, just read it. And apparently that changed his life forever.
Rush, you know, and of course we lost Rush last month. I'm lucky. I never met Rush, but I know David, his brother, very well. And he's a good friend. He writes books about Jesus and always sends me a copy. And I've got like 3 signed copies near my bed. And they're like looking at me, taunting me, because I know if I read them, I'm going to have to like change things in my life. I think I'm like a spiritual drunk. I haven't quite hit bottom yet. But actually, I'll pick them up and get myself together better. But he is a great guy. And I you know, I don't want to intrude on him, but I made it clear just how much people love Rush and his family and how they're praying and thinking about him. And it's just, I hope that gives them some comfort. I mean, it's got to be a very tough time to lose your brother. I haven't gone through that, fortunately.
Yeah.
Way to go.
So,
way to go.
Yeah.
But what a couple of legends.
Yeah, just real quick. Well, your favorite caliber is .45, right?
It is. It is.
And you like sarcasm and red meat, so you're in the good company. Now, the CQB, the Colt .45 CQB, it's a real bargain at like $2,800. So I had to settle personally for, you know, an H&K P2000, Smith & Wesson, and about 3 or 4 others. But Mrs. Robb, she had even more guns than I did, which
nice.
Was the attraction, of course.
Nice.
You like .45 caliber. I'm more of a .40 Smith & Wesson guy with hollow points. So, and I just got my Springfield Saint a few months ago. So now I have an AR-15, which is nice.
Nice. That's, you know, that's
apocalypse. Right.
Look, and I like the diversity of calibers and weapons platforms that we can, you know, because diversity is our strength.
That's
you
right.
know, as far as armaments go,
well,
and
caliber,
I'm right. very in calibers. You know, I'm not going to judge. I mean, if you go 7, you know, if you're like a 25 cal, I am going to talk about you, but. No, I have shot the Wilson CQB. It's It is more gun than I deserve. I carried a 45 for a long time in the Army, and it is not in the same universe as the old standard 45, which I love. It is a work of art that fires bullets, and of course, we all aspire to this.
That's right. And all of you who will be reading all of Kurt's books will find that that particular Colt CQB is one is his single favorite handgun.
And it appears frequently.
Yeah, and it was. Kelly Turnbull is my new greatest hero. I started with, it wasn't so much Jack Ryan in the Tom Clancy books. It was more John Clark. And then, of course, I graduated to Mitch Rapp in the Vince Flynn books. And then, of course, I think it was Scott Horvath in the Brad Thor books. And then you came along, Kurt. You had to destroy my life by coming up with a new hero, Kelly Turnbull. And again, kind of like Breitbart in the Rush book, you changed my life.
Well, look, I like to make a difference, usually for the worse.
Well.
And look, I'm glad. I mean, you know, it's very gratifying that people like these books. I wish I could say it was like hard work, but it isn't, because it's so much fun writing them. I'm writing another one to come out in May, and I usually write in my head. I'll listen to 80s post-punk pop as I walk along. So I'll be cranking the Psychedelic Furs and playing out the things in my head. Because remember, I am a Southern California guy.
I know.
So, you know, when people look at me, they're like, hey, what do you think of Lynyrd Skynyrd? Well, I don't. I think of The Clash, though. You know? It was so funny. Gosh, when I was in the Army, of course, you know, I was college op from OCS, so to OCS. So I went basic training. Then I went into officer cadet school right away. And it's like, who the hell are you coming straight from college? And I was this California suburban guy. And I was there, and it's a primarily Southern organization. Lots of Southerners.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what the hell to make of me. I remember I was in Alabama training at Fort McClellan, and my pals took me, and we went to some college party in Birmingham. And they had apparently never seen a Californian dance. It was alarming for them. They actually shoved a spoon in my mouth so I wouldn't swallow my tongue. It was controversial. What a great experience being in the military, because it changed everything. I didn't know anything about leadership. I didn't know, you know, about other people. I just knew people kind of who grew up around me. And, you know, I wasn't against other people. I just didn't know them. And, you know, they sure as hell didn't know anybody like me. They were like, what the hell? What the heck is this? You know? You know, we found we had a lot of things in common, and we were able to get the mission done. And I came out of the military. I did 3.5 years active, and I come back to go to law school, right? And I was not a JAG at any time in my military career. It was always infantry or chemical corps. And I get to Loyola Law School, and all these people are saying things. Well, they're just not really particularly racially sensitive. Okay, they're not outright, you know, Klansmen, but they're saying they're distinguishing between people based on their race or ethnicity in ways that I was no longer used to. Mm-hmm. Right? I just in the military, and it just and I can't. Maybe they thought I was like open to it because I was the only military guy they ever knew, and they just didn't know what we were about. But I just found it. I found it baffling. I mean, it's not like I hated people, but they did judge people. And it was just weird to me.
Mm-hmm.
You go to a law school, and Loyola is a law school that rich kids go to when they can't get to USC. And I went, and I was around a lot of very rich kids. And they were a fast crowd. And, of course, you know, I was always happy to have a drink or 20 because I still had kind of that lieutenant. I got it. And I just come back from the war, so I was a little on edge anyway. But I was always, fighter pilots might be able to appreciate that there's kind of an epic of being the craziest guy in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting. I went through 3 years there, and then went on a little off field. I eventually became partners with a couple of guys who I went to law school with. And one day, years later, I remarked, I said, you know, what was weird is nobody at school did drugs. And they both looked at me like I was crazy. And they're like, Kurt, they didn't do drugs around you because they were scared of you because you were that army guy. I was like,
well, and who wouldn't be scared, right?
I was the one most likely to be on the roof with a rifle. So,
yeah.
And in fact, I did go through the Los Angeles riots while I was in law school. So I was out on the streets for 3 weeks during the riot. Real riots, not fake insurrections, not little shoving matches in Capitol Hill. And in the riots case, people really did get killed. That wasn't fake. Yeah, so I kind of had an interesting perspective. Perhaps other people did not. Because I just came back from the war when it started.
Well, yeah.
That was...
Oh, and just real quick, I did, as a midshipman, I did go to jump school at Fort Benning. I got my silver wings. And then in the Navy Marine Corps, I guess if you get 10 jumps, you get gold jump wings. So I had those too. But
nice.
Kind of like we're related now, right?
Well, I did get those wings so I could meet girls.
Right.
So I've done 5. I got my, I got my jump wings, and, you know, jump wings were a good conversation starter at bars and things. Hey, what's that on your chest?
Yeah.
You mean over my muscles? Why, that is those are airborne wings. I was a paratrooper for 3 weeks.
Those wings, that's all part of what you're saying of protecting the nation. We get it. We're with you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted to protect the nation. That was it.
Single-handedly.
Yeah, but I wanted to end the threat of hot girls being lonely.
Yeah, there you go. What a heart. That's it.
I give and give and give. That's what distinguishes me.
No, you're distinguished enough. And by the way, I need to pass you guys or get you guys to start talking because, again, this could be the Kurt and Rob show, and I didn't want that to happen.
No, that's
only turning into that.
Oh, no, it's great,
that's
Rob.
It's
pretty good.
Yeah. Tank, you got a question? Boy, Rob, we appreciate you, brother. Yeah.
You bet.
Tank, you got a question?
I was going to say, it kind of reminded me of why I was in the church choirs, because the girls. I could not only have them next to me, but look out over the whole, thing.
I've got respect for anybody who utilizes the tools at hand to have his game. Look, you're a church. What's the score? Who's hot? Who's not?
Yeah.
I was totally like that. My buddy from college was getting married in Houston after I got out. And he calls me, Kurt, come on out and be my best man. I'm like, are there going to be any hot girls there? He goes, yeah, there's one, but she's married. I'm like, oh, great. You're going to fly me out to a wedding where there's no hot girls. So I flew out there and I met this girl and her husband, and actually went back and, we had a little after party at their house with some other people in the wedding park, met her dog who bit at me. And then came home, and 4 years later, my friend had moved to Pasadena. He called me up, and I was single at the moment. And he said, Kurt, you want to meet that girl who you met at the wedding? I'm like, no. Why would I want to meet somebody who's married? Well, she's not married anymore. I'll come up. And that's how Arena and I got together. And that vicious dog became my dog. It's always great to start out the story. Yeah, I met her when she was married to someone else. And you just let that linger, and you don't give them the solution until like 2 minutes in, so they invest. Storytelling 101, folks. Boom. Always keep them wanting more.
Well, true confessions, both Nancy and I were married to other people. I had a little different situation than Nancy, but it all seems to kind of work out well. And I know that you've dedicated all of your books, I think, or at least Arena had helped you with the editing.
She does. She's my number one editor. I bounce ideas off her. She's been doing this since I was doing stand-up comedy. I mean, she hit in the back, usually with my law partner, and go, yeah, that was funny. That was funny. And then she'd run it down. The problem with stand-up, of course, is half the time you're below average. And the neediest people in the world are stand-ups. I was the only sane one, so I had this crew of stand-ups around me who were all crazy. But I had a real job, but I still liked going out there and knocking them dead. I got to tell you, I got up at CPAC a couple days ago. I did a panel, and I made a Lincoln Project joke. Oh, yeah. And good Lord, it was brutal. Yeah. And I also, when the media reported on it, it was because the only thing that they remembered was that I called Biden a desiccated old zombie, a weirdo. I got up there, man. I'm looking out at that crowd, and I don't understand people who are afraid of crowds. I love crowds, and I think they should all be looking at me because naturally I'm a Los Angeles trowel.
This may be a lot of insecurity issues that we can talk about later.
A lot of insecurity.
I just think, actually, you may want to talk more about the CPAC experience and who you heard. And
oh, my gosh. I can't tell you the very best stuff because I'm a lawyer, and everything people tell me, I keep as attorney-client privilege. But trust me, there was some good stuff. CPAC, first of all, I like Orlando. I saw an alligator. That was cool. The hotel had Southern charm, but also Southern efficiency. They didn't clean my room for 4 days. So that was, that was interesting. And you know how fastidious we infantrymen are. The CPAC itself was smaller, tighter, more focused, very upbeat, very positive. This was no wake. People were excited. People were ready. They were focused on things like electoral integrity, getting rhinos out of the party. And you can see who didn't show up. Nikki ! Haley didn't show up. She's the Jeb ! Bush of this cycle. She did not show up. Marco Rubio pulled out, which I think was a mistake. No one really hated him. Mike Pence, none of us hated him. In fact, a lot of people were like, you know, I like Trump, but I don't think he treated Pence right. Pence was loyal. You don't treat people like that. So get on Trump, do better. I did not see Trump. I've seen him before, and I predicted exactly what he would say, and he said it. And it probably would have been cool to see him, but I needed to be back here. It was smaller. A lot of big groups were not there. You didn't see, for instance, Fox News. You saw Fox Nation. So instead of Sean Hannity, we got Tomi Lahren. So that was...
Well, Tomi's cute. Better than Sean, at least, right? Kind
of. Tomi's still mad at me for something I wrote about her in a town hall. It was funny. She used to live in my town by the beach. And my wife was waiting for the kids at school, and Tomi Lahren walks by with like her poodle. And Arena goes, "Hey, Tomi." And Tomi looks at her just terrified. She's like, "Don't worry, I'm Kurt Schlichter's wife." She's getting more scared. It was very subdued. I think there'll be more people next time. I hope they have it in Florida again. I'd rather be warm than cold. The two things that the liberals focused on, one was the golden Trump idol. Okay, never saw it. No one was talking about it. Okay, you know, you're in the bar. That's where people mix and mingle, you know. Literally, I had to go read about it on the plane coming home, that there was this cool thing. And this was like the big deal. Right. And my favorite thing is when like the atheists start quoting the Bible at you, like, yeah. You know, there was such thing as a golden calf and it did something with somebody back in olden times, but you're not a very good Christian for some reason. It's like, well, thank you for your input.
Yeah, really. So Old Testament. Right? Yeah,
right. They'd be like, what's an Old Testament? How many are there?
But, new son of Lord,
you know, the only, I'm not sure what's worse, militant atheists or CrossFit fanatics, because neither of them will ever shut up.
Don't forget yoga.
I like hot yoga, and I like atheism, because I don't have any friends, and I needed something to hold on to.
Yeah, this is not to be offensive, Stephanie, okay? Just we're just
sharing ideas. You know what? I think you have to be able to laugh at yourself. It's okay to make fun of CrossFit.
Say it again, Steph.
You can just be offended.
Yeah. Now, I do want to mention, too, again, one of the things that I was always attracted to Colonel Schlichter Esquire's writing was that he's sort of a combination of many writers. I think, you know, H.L. Mencken comes to mind, meets P.J. O'Rourke, meets Mark Twain, meets George Orwell, meets Vince Flynn, meets Brad Thor. And then there's a dose of Tom Clancy and maybe Tom Wolfe on the side. And to me,
wow, that's quite a compliment.
Writing, which is what I really enjoyed the most about all your books.
My writing styles developed over 35 years since I was writing in college, UCSD. They had a humor paper, which eventually turned into a pornography paper after I left, and a conservative paper, which also turned into a pornography paper. This is a different story. But I was very influenced by guys like Dennis Miller, who eventually said I met or have done shows with, and he said very nice things about me, which was a big, yeah, I was very excited about that. But I like wordplay. It's like Sudoku to me. I like figuring out how in my mind I can make it as funny as possible or as interesting as possible. If you look at it closely, you'll see it's written. My articles are largely written in joke structure, which is every single thing is either a setup, a punchline, or a tag on the punchline. And I try and cut out all the fat. So, you know, it's basically 1,000 words, 1,500 words of jokes. And but they're not all funny, but they have the same rhythm, they have the same design. You like the impact comes, if I do it right, it comes at the end of the sentence, for instance.
Yeah.
So you don't hit a sentence and then have like 10 more words that are going to take away the impact. Mm-hmm. And I just love working on it and polishing it up so that, you know, one sentence, the next sentence is complimentary. It's in the same style. If I use a and then in one, I may use an and then in the next. So you get kind of the sequence. And then, of course, you employ the rule of threes, which is three is funnier than two and much funnier than four. And also K sounds. Words with K sounds are just naturally hilarious. Like
then you come back to the no mean tweets. Love the way you set that up. You just built and built and built, and then you disarm them completely. And when they're trying to figure out what you said, oh, by the way, boom, right between the eyes. You can preach a good sermon.
If you want to understand American rhetoric and you don't understand anything about preaching, particularly the more fiery churches, the evangelical churches, the Baptist churches, and the black churches, yes, to the extent they're different. Boy, you go to some of those churches, particularly South, you go in there and they appreciate someone who can put words together. Mm-hmm. And the fun thing is, you don't see preachers up there with a lot of notes a lot of times. They're doing it, they got it, and it's not that they've memorized it. It's that they know it and they feel it and it's coming out of them. And that's what I want. I can go back into my memory bank and do a 5-minute discussion of something I've done before. I know kind of where it's going and I'll tweak it a little as I go. But they're there and you can put them together. But you also have, you know, you feel the crowd and their energy and you want to see where they're going to go, because you can't reach somebody if you're not talking to them. If you're talking at them, all this. right? If you're not bringing them in and bringing them along, they're going to forget.
That's right.
Like Paul is right now. He's like, what? Is that idiot still going on? Holy crap.
Oh, man, you misunderstand me.
Is that a saber back there? You got a calf saber?
Sponge, man.
All writing jokes right now.
This is fun. I read your I saw your interview with Tucker Carlson, one of the interviews you had with him, and you said you were having such fun. You said, I was just with some normal people. And I think it's really, it's fascinating, your insight. You have such fun with life, and, you take, you're serious, but you don't take yourself seriously.
No, I think that's true.
And I find that really delightful and refreshing. You know, Joe and I've discussed how many times, dry preachers and, here we go again, and you're exactly right. Draw them in, have fun, enjoy it. They need to see that you are enjoying what you're talking about. It's a part of you, So I appreciate that, Kurt. That's good.
Well, I'm lucky I get to do for a living things that I like to do. I know everybody doesn't have that option, I managed to set things up. So pretty much I'm always doing something that I kind of want to do. Not always, sometimes you go into the law office and it's like, answer interrogatories. I had one of my staff gave a resignation today. I had to deal with that. And that was sad. I had a lot of good people teaching me how to do stuff. I think I'm smart enough to steal good ideas from people.
It seems like maybe it's just America, but I know the Brits clearly and the Australians clearly have a very dry sense of humor. They love to
play. Yes, they do.
With everybody. And we've kind of lost that. I mean, if I were a stand up like you, I'd feel totally afraid of saying something that's offensive. That I'm poking, it's sarcasm, right? So it's not real, it's sarcasm. But you don't believe that, it's just sarcasm, but people are going to take it as if it is. So I don't know how you monitor yourself or just go and just hope that.
Sometimes I will pick my fights. And if it's like, suddenly an idea about some transsexual line jumps into my head and I want to emphasize how ridiculous and sometimes horrifying some of the more extreme things are. Do I want to have that fight today? Or am I in a different fight that's more important? And I'll go, okay, well, I'll shelve that. And, a week I'll point out how horrific it is to want to, mutilate or chemically change a young kid because he thinks he's a girl at this moment. It isn't that I'm avoiding the fight. I'm a colonel. I fight on my ground, at my choice, at my time. No one tells me where to fight. I'm not going to let myself be maneuvered into a position where I have to fight on somebody else's turf. I mean, that's what Hannibal did to the Romans at Cannae. I will not be double enveloped.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Another good thing about Kurt's books, by the way, is, and again, from a naval aviation puke standpoint, is he's really, really good with Army tactics, and you can learn an awful lot about how to ambush bad guys by reading his books. And I strongly recommend it, because you never know, the zombie apocalypse could be around the corner. Right?
I got a lot of grief, particularly about Indian Country, because that's basically an insurgency against a blue dictatorship by regular civilians. And the hero essentially does what special forces guys usually do. They don't kick in doors. They create insurgencies. Mm-hmm. And and they're like, you're telling people how to create a war. Dude, none of this stuff is a secret. Okay. The zealots were doing it to the Romans 2000 plus years ago. None of this, I had a scene where they basically went in and assassinated a couple people in a Starbucks. Okay? The zealots would, Romans getting some, putting fish sauce on a cucumber or something at a roadside in Jerusalem. A couple zealots come up with their knives and slap, 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 and they're gone.
That's
but, well, you know, hey, you play the game. Don't cry about the don't cry if you lose.
Oh yeah.
But the you know, I'm not telling any secrets. Actually, you know, you should think carefully before you start running your mouth about oppressing other Americans. You should think carefully about other Americans' theories. I mean, I had somebody say, how could you fight somebody? They have F-18s and F-15s and F-123s and blah, 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 and B-52s. And I'm like, yeah, okay. All of them need to be fueled. All their pilots need to drive from their base to the plane. I'm not going to shoot at a plane. Why would I shoot at a plane? Nobody's going to do that. In fact, the Taliban managed to infiltrate a Marine base in Afghanistan, and their target was to take out Harriers, which they did. And that was a strategic effect. They hurt our air support capacity. Cost about 20 guys. The ground crews fought them off heroically. And you know, again, none of this stuff is a secret.
No.
And anytime I say any of this stuff, you know, having served in the ruins of a real civil war in Kosovo and kept the peace there, which we did very effectively, and I'm very proud of it. You know, I this is all a warning. This is not a how-to. This is a hey, don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think again, guys. You. There seems to be this idea out there that if you can cancel people enough and intimidate them enough and threaten them enough, they're just going to shrug their shoulders and go, well, it's nice to be a citizen. I guess now I'll be a serf. You know, Hitler sent the Blitz over London to bomb the civilian areas so that the people would demand that Winston Churchill ended the war. Yeah. They demanded Hitler's head on a pike.
That's right.
Amen. Okay? That's not how human nature works, not for Americans. Mm. You know, I wish people would learn a little history. History did not begin in 1619, then skip all the way ahead to when Obama got elected.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Been there before and after.
Yeah, some people can speak freely because they're not hampered by the facts, and that makes it
exactly.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm going to have to say we have 4 minutes. We have 3.5 minutes to go. This is so fun. Somebody jump in. Just giving you
Stephanie, I know you have questions.
I just want to hear a CrossFit joke. Make fun of me.
No. What? That's like go and make a. You don't make a joke. It's inorganic. That's hack. Don't make jokes.
No comedian.
I take what's going on, and anyway, I'm not one of the guys who makes CrossFit jokes. I take what's going on and I comment on it and see, you know, and put things together. But I'll tell you, CrossFit is the lawyer's friend.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's like if I want a nicer car, hey, get a gym as a client. But.
Injury material?
Oh, yes.
Ah, okay.
Oh, yeah. Did you know CrossFit guys have different certification standards than typical gym guys? And that is a big issue among lawyers who do athletic law. So throw that out there. I know that's super interesting. Let me tell you a little more about the consumer expectation test and products liability. That'll kill a couple minutes and a couple brain cells. Actually, I do have a fun story. I was in New Orleans doing a thing with Senator Kennedy, not the glug glug drink drink crash crash Kennedy, the other one. And he gets up and he does this whole corn pone thing to the crowd. He's like, oh. Oh, shucks. And I had researched the guy. I knew what this guy was. And he gets off the stage. He's pretty happy. And he comes up to shake my hand. I lean in and I go, hey, Senator, I read your law review article on the consumer expectation test and product liability case. Great bit up there. And he just looks at me and he just starts laughing.
Someone got it. There you go.
He's like, he gets it. Oh, we had a great time.
Hey, Kurt, how can we get an address? Rob, we help with that. Get an address. Get it on our website so people can find your books. Amazon, they go anywhere.
Right? Yeah, go on Amazon. They're on Amazon. And try them out. It's a lot. They're a lot of fun. You can follow me on Twitter. I have a locals community now called the Schlichter Arena. Get it? Irina, pun.
There you go.
And I'm going to be hosting for Hugh Hewitt Wednesday morning. And among my guests are my personal friend, Rick Grinnell, who lives in my town. And Rick I'm very glad to know him. Rick Grinnell. Who I think will be president.
At least governor of California, from what I understand.
Well, that could possibly happen. I think, as you know from my books, I'm a big fan. I think he's the real deal. And who else am I having on there? Gosh, now I'm totally blank. David Marcus from the Federalist, Kira Davis from Red State, Jen Van Laar from Red State, Jim Hansen, Special Forces guy. I just got all these people. We're
going to tune in, everybody. We'll get that word out, tell everybody we know, and we want you to know it's sure been a blast, I want to say it that way, to get to know you better, and really appreciate what you do. And Rob, thanks for getting a hold of him for us, and we'd love to have you back someday, but we're going to follow you. And you ready for this? Hey, I tell you what, Kurt, we're going to be praying for you. We're going to be praying for you every day that God continues to wake people up and give you a gift of what you're sharing, because it's getting the message out there, different ways of doing it. We're going to be praying for you on that.
Well, I certainly appreciate it. And I know that there's not enough time for all the prayers you need out there. So give me a short one and give some to the people who need them.
Okay, Jesus wept. I think that's the shortest one.
My chaplain convinced me to read one chapter of the Bible every day, and I've done that for like 12 years. And I decided I would read it in sequence, starting at the New Testament. That went old. I mean, I think I'm at Psalm 94 right now. There's a lot of salahs going on. A lot. Yeah. A lot. And man, there's some unhappy people going on. I'm not looking forward to Lamentations, let me tell you.
Yeah. Lamentations. The third chapter of John, that'll fire you up and send you going to the home run, John.
I'm going through.
Yeah, all right. Hey, well, God bless you, friend. And
thank you.
We appreciate it. We're behind you. And hey, guys, gals, thanks for everything. I wish we had more time. We better wave you off. We always do that because Rob was a pilot. So we always say, wave off.
We don't want
to. We'll see you later, okay?
I know, you guys.
Thank you, Kurt. And Kurt, accept my Facebook friend request, okay?
I didn't even look at my Facebook thing, but I'm going to
tell you. You do things.
I post my stuff. That's all.
That's okay. We'll
see you later.
Thanks,
guys.
Bye.
Love you guys.
See you next week.
Friends, thanks for joining us on this week's program of Raising Expectations. We profoundly hope you found it engaging and at times humorous, but most of all, uplifting, so that we may, with you, one topic at a time each week, become more encouraged to move forward to an exciting future in, as we always say, this thing called life in America today. So let not your hearts be troubled, your family, finances, faith, freedom. It can be a great future as we talk, listen, respect, and pull together. Please let me hear from you. You can reach me at 972-922-8556. That's 972-922-8556. Or Joe Schofield on Facebook or LinkedIn. It'd be a pleasure to know you, and we hope you'll listen in again next week on the BBS Radio Network.